Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Ilona Thompson with Palate Exposure. I am here with Adam Stamler and Colin Baker. We'll start with Adam. He's a co-founder and partner in the Farm League Restaurant Group.
Correct.
And we'll learn a lot about him today. You guys really would be fascinated by his life's journey.
Yeah.
How did it all begin?
It's kind of an interesting story because mine starts with a brutal lesson in economics at a young age, and it became very apparent to me around the age of like 12 or 13 that if I wanted to have a car at any point of my teenage experience, that I was going to have to contribute in that. And I had amazing parents, but my mom was like, hey, if you chip in, I'll chip in, but you should probably get a job. And I was like, you know what, I'm good with that. So I got exposed to the greater sphere of service of people at the age of 13 before I jumped into the restaurant world with 2 feet. And I had an immediate connection with having the opportunity to interact with people as a job. And it was kind of a nice escape for me from academia at the time. I never really resonated with sitting with books in front of my face. And I wasn't very engaged with school at that point in my development and my age. I took a brief hiatus from the service industry in my early 20s when I had an opportunity to join a band that was seemingly doing some big things. We had a developmental deal with a leg of Capitol Records, so we were getting a lot of opportunities thrown at us to play big shows, to do recordings and fancy recording studios, and I had serious delusions of grandeur around the time that I was like 22 or 23 that I was going to be able to make money off of playing really terrible pop punk music. In hindsight, we had a lot of fun, but it was pretty bad. And then one day we show up at band practice, and you know all of our gear is spread across the room, and we look where our guitar player's gear is, and there's no amp, there's no guitar, there's nothing. There's just a note that says, hey, you know, I've been doing some soul searching and I've decided that I'm gonna follow my calling. I'm on a plane to Israel right now and I'm gonna study to become a rabbi. I'm not one to cast aspersions at anyone that has a spiritual revelation of that manner. It was a hard pill to swallow at the time, but I think if that's what someone wants to do with their life, so be it. You support people's decisions. In the wake of his decision though, the people that we were working with kind of decided that we were an unstable asset. And we got dropped from everything that we were doing. And getting to that point, I had basically sold all of my worldly possessions with the exception of a suitcase of clothes and my music gear. And I think also in the wake of my band kind of dream slowly collapsing upon itself, I started dealing with a lot of health problems that were likely self-induced because of stress and everything else. I ended up being homeless for 7-8 months, and homeless in the sense of I was living out of a Volkswagen Jetta and couch surfing when I could, sleeping at parks when I couldn't, didn't have the confidence or like the constitution in terms of health to really feel like I could get a job. And after, you know, 7-8 months of dealing with that, I was finally starting to get my confidence back and feeling healthy enough to get a job, and I was able to talk myself into a bartending job without any formal bartending experience at a place that only served beer and wine. And they were like, well, we're only a beer and wine spot, so it's fine. You don't necessarily need to know these things. At some point, they applied for full liquor and got it. So I started having the opportunity to kind of mix drinks. And that was just a huge turning point and a revelation for me, having the opportunity to not only have a creative outlet, but a creative outlet that actually put money in my bank account so I could do more than just eat Top Ramen and peanut butter sandwiches on a regular basis. And I had some friends at the time that were working at a really premier nightclub in San Diego. And I was like, that's the spot I need to work at. There's no doubt in my mind. They had just such a great working culture there. So I showed up to talk to their general manager and I was like, hey, just some of my friends work here, kind of inquiring if you guys were looking for a bartender. And she's like, we don't hire bartenders. I'm not going to hire you. It's not happening. I said, okay, I'm going to come back in 2 weeks. She's like, it doesn't matter. You're not going to get hired. I'm like, that's fine. I'm going to come back in 2 weeks. So I came back in 2 weeks. She's like, I walk up the steps to the office. I get my head above the ledge. She's like, still not hiring. I'm like, okay, I'll come back. Came back in 2 weeks. I played that game for about 3 months or 3.5 months. And then finally she was like, you really want to work here, don't you? And I'm like, I want to work here so bad. And she's like, all right, I want to make this clear. I'm not offering you a job, but I have a lot of bartenders that are inquiring about getting New Year's Eve off because there's some big festival with glow sticks and tutus and, you know, all the other ridiculous things people do at festivals, and apparently that was important to those people. She's like, I'll let you work that night, but you have to promise you'll stop coming in if I give you one chance. And I was like, that's fair. I won't come in anymore. So I get the opportunity to work on New Year's Eve. I'm calling all my friends and I'm like, hey, can you please come into this club and just sit in front of my well and spend money and help me look good? I've got one chance at this opportunity. So I had about 15 or 20 friends come in and support me that night and spend what little money they had. And at the end of the night, the general manager, the same woman, who by the way is one of my best friends in the entire world now, came up to me and she pulled everyone's report and she was like, who else was ringing on your register tonight? I was like, nobody, just me. She's like, that's impossible. No one pulls these numbers out of this well. And I'm like, you want me to be honest? And she's like, yeah, be honest. I'm like, I called every friend I knew that would come in and spend money here because I wanted to impress you guys. And she was like, you're still not hired, but I'll put your phone number on a list. I might need you at some point. I'm gonna call you if and when we need you. And literally every time that woman called me, it didn't matter what I was doing. I'm like, I will be there in 20 minutes. And then at some point I worked my way up to becoming the lead bartender at a nightclub, making entirely too much money for a 22, or I guess I was 23 at that point, 23-year-old person that had, you know, no advanced degree or anything like that. And over the course of the next 4 years, I made really good relationships with some of the people that I worked with, including the owners, and I saved almost $100,000 of my own money, and I was able to kind of start doing other things in the entrepreneurial world, including an opportunity that came at myself. One of the owners of the nightclub, we were all in a staff meeting, and the two owners were sitting in front of us, and they said, hey, we're looking to do some renovation to the space, but we don't have the largest budget in the world. If any of you guys would like to come and swing hammers and all that stuff with us, we'll buy you guys lunch and drinks, but we don't have a ton of money for this right now. And I think I was the only person in the room that volunteered, or maybe it was me and one other person. And then, you know, in the process of me jackhammering up a bunch of tile that was ugly and old so that we could resurface the floors and, you know, make the club a little bit more aesthetically pleasing as we were aging. And, you know, at some point in a club's evolution, you have to be the shiny new thing on the block to keep people engaged. So, you know, we're giving the place a facelift to stay relevant in the market. And I was just talking to the dude and I was like, hey, if you were, I think I was 25 at that time, maybe. It's like, hey, if you were 25 and you had X amount of money in the bank, what would you do with it? And he was like, how do you have that much money in the bank? He's like, are you a drug dealer? I'm like, no, I don't sell drugs. He's like, dude, I don't care. You can tell me. It's all good. I'm like, no, I've lived in the same janky college apartment for the better part of 4 years now. My rent is almost nothing. I work almost 7 days a week. I'm not in a position to spend any money. So everything I make goes in my bank account. I eat at work every day. And when I'm not at work, I'm asleep. And he was like, why don't you hold on to your money and I'll call you when the opportunity is right. And maybe 5 or 6 months later, he called me, came and picked me up, drove me to a burned down building in Pacific Beach, California, and said, hey, Matt and I just bought this place. Would you like to come on?
Burned down?
Well, like it had burnt out, not burned down entirely, but enough structural fire damage to where the operator at the time, well, I'm not going to be a conspiracy theorist, but anytime a struggling restaurant burns down.
I see what you mean.
And then the owners are like, yeah, we'll be done. You know, so, you know, that was a common occurrence in like old family Italian restaurants. And my business partner always jokes about Italian wildfires that happen in kitchens or whatever. So this restaurant that wasn't doing very well had a fire. I can only assume the owners collected insurance money and backed out. But there was enough structural damage there where, you know, the business was for sale. And he said, hey, you know, we just bought this place. If we give you the opportunity to come on as an operational partner and a manager here, would you be willing to invest a little money and, you know, and do this project with us? And I was 25 at the time. I had absolutely no formal management experience or any training. And I was like, absolutely. So we get close to opening that business and they're like, Adam, you're on. And I'm like, training? They're like, no, you got this. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. They're like, yeah, but you'll figure it out. Like, that was equally as flattering that they believed in me to do something like that as it was terrifying to know that we're in the process of opening, I think the total capacity on that project is probably 300 or maybe 350, two stories, ocean
talking
view.
About people,
350 people, yeah. Relatively bougie, you know, it's yeah. Pacific Beach, I don't know if you guys know that community, but it's very like college-driven consumer base with salt and peppered with other young socialites and a lot of military and things like that. But it is one of the party destinations of San Diego. And the owners had a vision of doing something slightly elevated and a little bit more upscale than the typical college dive bar. So some of the adults that live in that community would have a place to go. And I was like, all right, here's my opportunity. And I just lived, breathed, and died in the place. I was just there every single day. There were points where I was making 4 and 5 trips back and forth between my really cheap college apartment and that place, which were about 35 minutes apart. And I was like, all right, I need to move closer. Moved closer to that. We had relative success after skating through our first winter with very small margin of error. I think there were multiple points where we might have came real close to closing. The very first winter that we opened that place, it rained every single weekend for the entire month of December and most of January. And with us having a rooftop deck on the second floor that is your moneymaker, there was a lot of stress that got through us getting through that first winter, but we made it
what
through.
What year was this?
This would have been in 2007, I believe, is okay. When the fire, and the place is called the Firehouse in Pacific Beach, and it's actually still open, still functional, and still operational. So it would have been 2007 or 2008, I believe, when we opened. So did that. After 2.5 years of being there, owners pull me aside. They're like, hey, we have another project in downtown San Diego we want you to be a part of. Not sure if there's going to be ownership opportunities, but we'll make sure you're well compensated. So I moved down there and I built out the original beverage program for Vin de Syrah, which is a spirit and wine parlor in the Gaslamp District. Also still open, still functional, still operating. It's got a really cool design aesthetic, kind of Alice in Wonderland-esque. It's got a very like cool, like I discovered this place because it's underground. You feel like you're going down into a shady subway before you find the place, and then you get inside this room that's vibrant and it has all this cool, whimsical design elements and furniture and everything else. And I got to kind of participate a little bit in the creative design of the brand concept there, but I got free reign over the beverage program. And at that point, cocktail scene in San Diego was still basically non-existent, and there were maybe 7 or 8 of us that were kind of writing the script as we went. And that, I think, really opened itself up to other opportunities to start getting into the consulting world. The consulting world gets into I started doing a lot of cocktail competitions, won a couple local competitions, ended up going on to win a state competition, got the eyes of other business owners that are like, hey, you know, will you come and consult on my beverage program? And you know, a lot of the times I'll have young bartenders hit me up and say, hey, I'm looking to get into consulting. What do you recommend I do? And I tell them my process and they're like, yeah, I'm not willing to do that. And basically I called business owners and I was like, I'll do your program for free, but just don't tell anyone that I did it for free because I need to build a resume. So I did my first 3 or 4 or maybe even 5 programs for like a bar tab so I could eat for free. But I had no resume. I mean, I had a small resume, but I was like, you know, I don't have a big enough resume to go out and warrant a premium price tag to be able to do this. So I did, I think, at least 3, if not 4 or 5 programs completely for free, just to be able to go back to other potential clients and be like, hey, check out these programs I did. Go in there. Here's a gift card. If you like it, let me know. You know, we can talk about rates and everything else. So getting into consulting kind of lent me some creative freedom to not have to be behind the bar so much, and started doing some startup projects with who is now my business partner, Joel, down in San Diego. And as life is interesting and crazy, one day Joel calls me and he's like, hey, Jordan and I, his then fiance, now wife, he's like, hey, we want to do the family thing. We're going to be moving back to the Bay. Actually, they were married at that point. And we actually met, interesting story as well. He was running the West Coast for Trumer Pills, which is a brewery based out of Berkeley. Your background in beer, I'm sure you know about them.
Yep.
Showed up on my doorstep at the Firehouse one day selling beer. And I was like, you know, I don't know if this brand is perfect for this bar, but there's something about this dude that really speaks to me. And, you know, we got to know each other better. And, you know, I didn't treat him like he worked for me. And he was all incredibly hospitable when we were in binds and needed product. And we forged a relationship. And then when him and his wife decided to move back to the Bay Area to do the family thing, he's like, hey man, life's weird. You never know what's gonna happen. We could cross paths again. I wish you nothing but the best. Maybe we'll link up again at some point. And I was like, God, what an amazing dude to like leave things that open-ended, even though he knows he's moving on to the next chapter of his life. And then sure enough, in 2012, I get a phone call from him one day, and he's like, I think I found us an opportunity to open a bar. Can you get on a plane like ASAP, like maybe even tomorrow? And I was like, well, I don't know if tomorrow's gonna work, but I can definitely make getting on a flight. So I think I got no flight within the next couple days. Kind of gave me a little tour of the East Bay, what was going on in Oakland, what was going on in Berkeley. Showed me an opportunity that we had to buy our own restaurant and operate our own restaurant. He's like, but hey, in the interim, we have this other consulting avenue. You should do that now so you can maybe build up a name so that when we go to do our own project, you're not a complete unknown up here. You know, you get a little experience under your belt, make some connections with people in the local community, and then when we shift to do our own project, you know, you'll have a following and everything else. I'm like, yeah, that's a really smart idea. So while we're trying to get this project open, and we were in the process of opening, reopening a space that was called Cafe Venezia in Berkeley, California. So we're talking to potential investors, some people that my partner knew from growing up and from his past, and the people that we were talking to that were gonna be our potential investors were like, hey, we love this. Please don't go shop around. We wanna fund this thing. We have you, don't worry about it. We're gonna get you guys the capital you need to do this project. And fun lesson for anyone who may be watching this. Anytime a potential investor says, do not shop this around to other people, don't listen to them. They're totally attempting to shortchange your idea. But in our own naivety, we were like, hey, you know, we sort of know these guys. We're not gonna shop this around to other people. And through the process of us trying to get our lease negotiations and the purchases and everything else kind of worked out, they kept coming back to the table being like, hey, you know, this contract, we need to know what operating capital means. And you know, they had this thing and that thing and the other thing. And so we kept going back to lawyers. And I don't know if anyone here has dealt with trying to get contracts and lawyers.
I've dealt with that a lot.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
No, it's not.
And every time we would rewrite the contracts to their specifications, then they would want a new thing. And then finally we're like, hey guys, this is ridiculous. So we got a neutral person, actually one of the owners of Drake's Brewing, to sit down with both the investors and us. We both put everything on the table, and Roy from Drake's Brewing was like, hey investors, you guys are getting a smoking deal. These guys are willing to give up a lot. I don't know why you're jerking chains too hard, because everything I know about bars and restaurants tells me that these guys are being completely fair for what they're asking for. And then the investor guys were like, okay, okay. And then basically the day that we were supposed to collect money from them, we hit them up and they said, quote unquote, yeah, this has just taken too long for us. We decided to move forward with another opportunity that's more predicated in real estate than restaurants. So wow. Joel and I got burned for, I think, $25,000
or $30,000. Wow.
And it was enough for me to be like, I don't ever want to do this again. I was already planning on moving back to San Diego, but in the process of us trying to reopen Cafe Venezia, we had consulted on a little teeny tiny bar that ended up being East Bay Spice Company. There's a silver lining in every cloud. And, you know, me feeling sorry for myself and, you know, playing the whole woe is me and I feel like a victim and yada yada, I was all but ready to move to San Diego. And then we sat down with the owner of Spice Company. He's like, hey, I really like how this is going, how do I know that it continues going this way once you leave? And I'm like, you don't. You're gonna hire someone and they might do a great job or they might do a terrible job, who knows? But that's a risk you have to take as a business owner. And he was a sixth generation Indian chef who had a lot of experience running restaurants but had never really run a cocktail centric project. So he knew that he was like, I can't run this place. And he's like, no, you have to stay. And I was like, no, dude, I'm leaving. There's nothing for me here and my dreams have already been shit on. And he's like, if I make you a partner in this project, will you stay? And I was like, talk to me. And once again, you know, life kind of kicked me in the face, but I got one little shard of hope out of an arena that I wasn't even expecting to happen. And I picked myself up off the ground for maybe the second major time in my life. And I was like, yeah, let's do this again. And I ended up staying. That bar went on to win a small handful of awards and, you know, nothing overly prestigious like Tales of the Cocktail or anything like that, but you know, we're in a little tiny secondary market in Berkeley, but
it's got a very good reputation.
It's doing okay. I only put X amount of stock in what other people say about what you do. I think it's important to be cognizant of what your audience says, but at the end of the day, I try to validate internally as much as possible. And if you know that you're doing everything to the best ability that you can do it to, and you can't give anything more than you're giving, if that's enough for people, great. If that's not enough for people, great. Because I couldn't have done it any other way. So I was like, hey, here's an opportunity for us to do things. I'm going to put everything on the table. I'm going to do everything to the best of my ability. Is it going to be perfect? No. Is it hopefully going to be better than average? Fingers crossed. But that's the mentality that we went into it in. And we ended up winning Best Bar in the East Bay 2 years in a row in the East Bay Readers Pool. And we quadrupled the previous business's best year. Within our second year, we were doing four times the sales that Deepak's business was doing in that place. He had an Indian buffet, kind of an interesting story. He was able to
Indian
turn it.
Indian buffet cocktail bar?
So he had an Indian buffet there. Let me backtrack for a second. So he has an Indian buffet in this space. He enters the lottery for the liquor licenses, which most municipalities have, and he was able to turn a 10 p.m. beer and wine license, so like done serving alcohol at 10 p.m., into a 2 a.m. full liquor license.
Do you have to pay a lot for that?
No, just purely on the lottery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just all through the lottery. And when my business partner was already living up here, he was selling spirits to Deepak at one of his other locations. And Joel was like, dude, open a cocktail bar. And Deepak's like, what do you mean? All bars serve cocktails. And Joel's like, no. All bars serve drinks. Not all bars serve cocktails. Open a cocktail bar. You'll be first to market. He's like, I promise you it'll do well. The demographics of Berkeley are changing. They're changing quickly. This isn't a project that'll necessarily be gangbusters overnight, but as Berkeley continues to develop and the populaces of college students and people that are older than my grandparents is gonna start to kind of move into the middle, and when that happens, there's gonna be nowhere for these people to go and enjoy themselves. Get ahead of that curve now, because there's gonna be more young professionals moving to Berkeley in the next decade.
So at that time, were you guys the first serious cocktail program?
No, I wouldn't say we were the first serious cocktail program. I like to be honest about who is doing what. And there's a couple places in Berkeley that deserve that recognition. There's a Mexican food restaurant called Kamal that was smart enough to hire, I believe, the guys from the Bon Vivants originally set up their bar program.
The dog guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know Scott Baird was very involved in that project. I don't know what the other partner's involvement was, but they were making really forward-thinking, awesome agave-based cocktails, but in a restaurant environment. And it was still a place that closed kind of early. It was still a place that felt very much like a restaurant, but they were making real deal cocktails in that space long before we did anything in Berkeley. There was a restaurant down the street from us called Gather, which had a really progressive, forward-thinking chef there that was, you know, attempting to do really cool, innovative things with cocktails and succeeding on a lot of levels. But most of the cosms of cocktails that were happening in Berkeley were happening in restaurants. There was no true bona fide cocktail bar. There were some amazing bars in Berkeley, but I don't think anyone was like, hey, we're doing cocktails first and foremost. We're going to put that stamp, you know, that flag in the sand. And we opened in April 2013. We were able to get Eric Quilty, who is a known consultant in the Bay Area, who had done a lot of really amazing projects with his consulting group called Jupiter Olympus. To come on and help us get open. We wouldn't have been able to get that project off the ground without Eric. He was incredible in that process. And our timelines kept changing, and I was still working on consulting projects in San Diego, so I wasn't able to be there full time. But we opened in April of 13. I think by August or maybe September of 13, I was like, I have both of my feet in this fire. We have nothing else going on. Let's do this. And then Spice Co. started to get some recognition, and then all of a sudden we get opportunities to do some other smaller consulting projects. We flipped another restaurant in North Berkeley into a place that's now called Tiger Lily, which is still there, and won Best New Restaurant in the East Bay Express Readers Pool, I think in 2015. Won Best New Chef in the East Bay that first year. We got that place open, operational, and running. And then I think the next real big critical mass for our company's story is our friends from Drake's, who my business partner was the general manager of the Bear's Lair, which was a kind of a legendary campus bar way back in the day that burned down, has since reopened, I unfortunately haven't.
I think I've been there maybe back in my college days.
The old school one?
I think so.
Yeah. But anyway, Joel was the general manager there, and there was a point in their business evolution where they're about to close their doors, and Joel went to the owners and the director of operations, and he said, hey, give me 6 months, let me do this exactly the way I want to do it, but just give me 6 months and give me free rein. I promise you I can save this bar. And they were like, okay, door guy, because he was working the door, I think, at the time, but sure, like, well, what do we have to lose? And Joel was able to single-handedly turn that bar around. I mean, not single-handedly, he obviously had help. So he had a working relationship with the guys at Drake's, and then, you know, he gets in contact with the guys of Drake's dealership, and he says, hey, I noticed that your guys is the dealership project that's in Uptown Oakland. Have you been to that space?
Mm-mm.
It's a 10,000 square foot brew pub that's located right in Uptown Oakland in the Impact Hub.
That's huge.
Yeah, Calaveras.
Distillery, 6,000 square feet.
Yeah, it's enormous. It's 400 plus people.
Wow.
It might not be exactly 10,000. It's in the sphere of 10,000.
It's huge.
It's enormous.
Yeah.
But you know, they were doing renovations at the brewery at the time. They were kind of increasing their production capacity, and they also have this dealership project. And then they're also operating Jupiter and Triple Rock, which are two very well-known kind of legendary beer spots in Berkeley. And Joel hits up John and Roy, and he says, hey, I noticed your guys' project stalling out. Is there anything me and my business partner can do to help you guys out to maybe get this project open? Because lo and behold, they're, you know, dealing with operational costs, like we had talked about earlier, and they have no income coming in through the front door. So Joel's like, hey, I have a relationship with these guys. You don't. Let me go talk to them, and I'll find out what they want. I said, okay, that sounds great. So he comes back after meeting with them. I'm like, so what's the deal? And he's like, so they want us to basically help them design the entire place, hire their entire staff, train their entire staff, and get this place open. And I look at Joel and I'm like, are we qualified to do that? And he's like, no. And I'm like, so then we're gonna do it, right? He's like, hell yes, we're gonna do it. And I was like, all right, dude. And once again, you know, the part of me, like, and honestly, to this day, I still have imposter syndrome. But part of me, I could feel the imposter syndrome of myself being like, dude, we're gonna fail. We're not qualified to do this. We don't deserve this opportunity. And then the whole time, you know, my business partner's a four-time rugby champion for Cal, and he just has championship mentality all the time. He's like, nah, dude, we got this. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do it right. We're gonna do it well.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.